it's going to take time, like, to convince people, right, that, hey, you know, you don't have to only have this in December, right? Like, we could consume this delicious thing outside of only December. Is it going to take some, you know, maneuvering, and it has to be via the right brand? But those are all details.
Benvenuti a Ciao Bella. I'm your host, Erica Firpo. For the past 20 years, I've made my home in Rome, where I've worked as a journalist contributing to publications including Afar, Washington Post, Lonely Planet, and Travel and Leisure. I love sharing the stories of Italy's pioneering creators, and I'm bringing these stories directly to you on Ciao Bella. Every week, I'm joined by contemporary artists, heritage artisans, designers, culinary experts, innovative aesthetes, and more. At the crossroads of evolution and tradition, the past and the future, they are working and creating to define and redefine 21st century Italy. Join me as we see Italy through their eyes. Hey, remember a few episodes back when I jumped headfirst into panettone to share with you some of Italy's very best bakers' thoughts on the Christmas cake? One of the takeaways is that panettone can and should be eaten at any time of the year. No one champions this idea better than Chef Roy Schwarzappel, the Texan-Israeli baker who's making year-round panettone his life mission.
Since you and I are both from the U.S., with respect to what 99.9% of the public has access to in the U.S., whether it's mozza for $6, or a fancier one for 38 or 42 that's at your local gourmet food shop. There is the delta between those is it's closer than you think. Why? Because all of those, regardless of the price point that they lie in, are all produced in June in a factory, to be put on a container, to be on an ocean container for 6 weeks, for you to be able to eat for the next two Decembers, right? Without going bad, right? And that's just a business model for the exporting part of the panettone industry that has just been unchanged.
And it's like, it's gross, but it's also tragic in the sense that it really has given panettone a bad name.
Completely.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of those things I can't even, and actually, my question is this, what's a nice Israeli-American boy from Houston doing, making panettone?
So, I mean, a few months ago, I started this hashtag on some of my posts, hashtag, it's not about the panettone, right? Ah. In that, I know we live in a world where, and you know, yours truly probably guilty in some arenas, where we really fixate on the what, right? What, like the vessel of whatever someone is, whatever it is they are doing, right? And sadly, I think we're kind of deep diving away from who cares about the what. It's really about the who, right? Now, I think the reason we fixate so much about the what is because so much of our life today and what we consume is just so automated and convenient and comfortable, and we like, oh, there's a who behind probably something that you really, really love, right? And so why panettone specifically is just a detail, really, right? I mean, I'm a classically trained it's my laundry. Classically trained pastry chef, baker. And in my journey through my career, very early on, I came across this product. Now, this product, I separate from coming from the States. The only thing I knew about panettone was, oh, it's that inedible $6 thing at like every 7-Eleven, and like, who in the world eats this? Like, why would anyone eat this? And it wasn't until I got to Europe very, very early in my career working that I was introduced to this completely other universe category of this product, in which, much like you, I was like, this is terrible. And it blew me away. I was just completely blown away by kind of, it was different than I'm eating something delicious. I've had lots of delicious, right? I was working at the time for Pierre May in Paris, so there was no shortage of delicious happening all the time. But this was a different, this was different than just delicious. It was a textural aha moment. It was this inexplicable, I couldn't understand how this was happening, and I'd never experienced anything like this. And then, you know, very rapidly kind of trying to understand this crazy process. And, you know, I generally gravitate towards things that are very, very difficult to do, to make. And so this kind of lives in a category of its own in the world of baking and pastry, right? Like, it's pretty universally regarded that in terms of degree of difficulty, nothing really shares space with panettone.
Which I, again, when I learned that, my mind was like literally turned upside down, because I guess I always equated it as like the basest thing on earth, because I didn't like it. Yeah. I didn't realize that it was like, until I met some bakers.
I mean, when done properly, I can also say that, because I visited industrial factories before, and while many of them certainly do take shortcuts in the process, there are factories that don't. But the minute you incorporate, we're going to make this in June for you to eat in December, and it won't go bad until next December. Well, you can respect all the process you want. The engineering of whatever it is in raw materials you're putting in this is engineered in a way to just not be tasty once the consumer receives it, right? So, the process itself is kind of unmatched. I mean, there's nothing else in bread or pastry that you could put in this category in terms of both degree of difficulty and how unforgiving it is, right? Most things, and having not spent a moment to really map out one that doesn't have this rule applied to it, most things, even ones that are unforgiving, right? If you remove a domino, the likelihood that the whole house is going to crash is very slim. Panettone is the opposite of that, right? People always ask, you know, what's the most important thing? The most important thing is everything, right? Like every detail, every step, every parameter, right? It is so delicate. And now, again, you know, to make panettone is one thing. To do it well is another thing. To be exceptional at it is a whole nother thing. To be consistently exceptional is even another, right? So like at every touch point of where you want to be on this ladder makes it all the more difficult, and it's not a linear progression either, right?
So from what I know about you, you're at the very tippy top of that ladder. I don't like to
conclude.
Well, I've heard
that
from other bakers, let's say, they've told me that.
But I will say that certainly I wake up every day and the goal is to certainly be in that conversation, right? The goal every day is like, I don't operate in, oh, this is good. I don't do good, right? Like if we're not at least aiming for like elite excellence every day, like it's not something I'm interested in, right? So that's also been a very kind of distinct part of my panettone journey from the moment I kind of got introduced to it. Like it blew me away, you know, on impact when I tasted it, and of course knew nothing about the product, about the process, about its history or anything like that. And kind of getting into, you know, I like to say going to the dark side with this obsession, because once that bug got me, it was game over in the context of like, I can't let go of this. Like I have to I have to understand this. And then once I understood it, and then once I kind of learned kind of basic process, and when I saw the process up close, I was like, oh my God, right? Now at the time, even when I kind of saw it, if you would have told me like my life's work would be, I'm gonna open a panettone company, I would say, what?
When did This Is From Roy officially open?
8 years ago.
So in
2015.
I bumped into, as one would casually say, I bumped into Nancy Silverton, who mentioned your panettone to me, because she was like, oh, you're going to be talking to him. You got to talk to him, because, you know, she was like, I was so obsessed with his panettone. And then last week or a week and a half ago, I was talking to Giovanni Giberti of Pave. And he says, hi, your pal. And we were talking about, like, he was like, oh, you have to ask Roy about, like, bakers versus pastry chefs in the world of panettone. Because he said it's like two worlds apart.
So bakers, I like to say, is a pretty singular category of craftspeople, right? If you're a baker, you're a baker, right? Now, within that, of course, you can be a very elite baker, you can be average, and you can be one that no one wants to, you know, discuss. Pastry, I like to say that, you know, I'm a hybrid of both, right? Much okay. of my career on the pastry side, but I always loved, you know, the bread, and so I really, and I also love cooking, right? Pastry, there's very distinct categories. One is pastry in a restaurant. The other is pastry in a shop sort of setting, right? They resemble each other not at all. If you've spent your career being a pastry person in a restaurant, walking into a pastry production setting for a shop will be like deer in headlights, right? That transition can often be very daunting to restaurant pastry people. Not that they can't acclimate or, you know, adjust over time, but it's very daunting. And when I say pastry in a restaurant, you know, like restaurants that, you know, I worked at high level, right? You're doing, you know, 40 covers a night, 100 covers, right? Your prep every day is so small, right? Everything you do, like most pastry stations and restaurants, like you work with a KitchenAid mixer or maybe a 20 quart Hobart. This doesn't apply in production world, right? KitchenAid is for R&D and maybe your house, right? And so I think the sheer scale of volume difference from restaurant world to production world is like, and I, you know, over my career, I've had so many pastry people come into production, and it's like this, oh my God, I don't even know what to do with all this. The inverse seems to be a much smoother transition. For example, if you took a pastry person from a pastry shop production scenario and told them, oh, now go spend some time working at the pastry station in this restaurant, that transition is easier than the other way around, just because it's like, oh, we need to make a batch of 20, or, you know, not 2000, right, of something. Baker, meaning you're not doing pastry stuff, is, you know, pretty singularly defined as everything you're doing typically is centered around yeast. Whereas in pastry, that's not necessarily true. So I like to say those are like three different worlds. There's baking, the bakery world, pastry shop world, and pastry chef restaurant world.
Restaurant,
and
right.
And those other two are very, very different from each other.
Hey there, it's pretty obvious that I love Rome and everywhere in Italy. So I'm excited to share that I've compiled all of my favorite places where to go, eat, see, and stay into the coolest, easy-to-use guides for Saltit. Saltit is a lineup of curated personal guides by expert journalists and travel writers like myself. My guides, Rome with Ciao Bella and Venice with Ciao Bella, are the very best on-the-ground resources for the Eternal City and La Serenissima. Every place that I love and repeat visit, from restaurants, bars, and boutiques, to art galleries, archaeo sites, hotels, and more are included. My guides are everything you need for Rome and Venice, and they are always up to date. The best part is that they support writers like me. Along with my guides, Saltit has great guides to Lisbon, Paris, Bologna, Philadelphia, and my favorite, Little Italy in the Bronx, by Ciao Bella guest Danielle Oteri. So visit Saltit and support a writer. It'll make you feel good. Saltit.com. SALTETE.com.
I'm really curious, especially since you've had This Is From Roy for 8 years now, and I see you have four different kinds of, right now I'm looking on the website, I see there are four different kinds, the triple chocolate panettone, the pistachio amarena panettone, the candied orange raisin, the chocolate. For the first question I have is, do you do a classico, like a basic?
It's on there, candied orange raisin. It's on the website right now.
Oh, you know what? I guess because I've never seen those words, I just see it as classico.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're absolutely right.
If I was in Italy, I wouldn't need to specify. But like when we started this, I mean, people take for granted today when they meet me or talk to me, like 8 years ago, there wasn't a single friend or professional colleague I had that was like, you know, I think this is a good idea. I think you should totally open a company in the U.S. that does one thing, makes this thing that most Americans like, well, why does anyone eat this? That today it was like, oh yeah, totally makes all the sense in the world is, you know, I laugh at it, but it's a very, it wasn't long ago where it was like, nobody thought this was a good idea.
I would have been one of those people that would be like, right now, please don't.
I get it. But I, you know, experiencing what I experienced in Europe, and you know, for me the precedence was already there. I wasn't like, short of like the specific business model that I started, which is I don't have a shop, we only sell online direct to consumer, I don't do wholesale, and we make one product and one product only, right? That's a business model thing. But this idea that you could have a business in this category of a product, which is panettone, that already exists. And within this category, there's a smaller category of exceptional artisanal products. This exists in Italy, right? I didn't like start this, right? Now that applying that category to this specific business model was unique, yes, sure. But when I came back from Europe back to the States and continued my career, I remember like, I just don't understand how the exceptional category of this product has not made its way to the US. Now, fortuitously for me, right, that it hadn't. Like the only things we get in the, by the way, even today, the only ones we get in the US, you know, are ones that they begin baking for you in June and July. That's just the reality, because the market doesn't allow, at least for the brands that currently exist in the U.S. You know, because people ask me, oh, but how would you combat, you know, the whole idea of transporting from Europe? You can't air freight, and then I immediately be like, why can't you air freight? Like, because it's too expensive. I'm like, so it's not about the air freight. It's you can't sell your product for more than you sell it for.
Right.
If you made an exceptional product that people would pay for, you could air freight. It reminds me of one of my favorite cliches. It sounds great in Hebrew, maybe less so in English, which is someone who doesn't know how to dance says the floor is crooked, right? It's not the floor is not crooked. You just can't dance. At $35, you can't air freight panettone from Europe, right? But if you sold a $100 panettone and it was baked in, you know, let's say beginning of November for your holiday season, well, sure you could.
Yeah.
Except you're just not making a good enough product and your brand doesn't command those prices. So I get it.
And there are I would also bet it's just they're not seeing the market research. But actually that makes me think of one question for you then. This is from Roy. Is panettone a full year thing for you, or is it literally seasonal?
Year round from day one. The premise of the business from day one was, people like to think I have a baking company. I don't have a baking company. I have a gift giving company. Like no one's like, oh, I'm hungry. You know, what should I get? Oh, let's order a pan. Like no one says that, right? You're either, you know, gifting yourself, right? You are gifting someone else. You have a dinner party to go to, right? Like the same reason you would go to, I don't know, I'm making this up, harryanddavid.com or name your gift giving company online. It's like, oh, so-and-so is graduating. Let's send them a bouquet of roses or a bottle of wine. Like this is the conversations that from Roizen.
Well, I think that's very Italian of you, because in that sense, like, at, you know, obviously at Christmas time, in Rome, we pretty much just have it Christmas season, the panettone. But, you know, when you give a panettone and when you receive one, they're like, oh, like it's you're not just getting any, like if you're going to give one, you're going to give a good one. And you, first of all, it's like, you want to give a good one because you trust it and you like it, and you know, it's really good, but you're also kind of like, I'm giving you a good one. Like,
absolutely.
It's an award-winning one, or this is one that's really special because it's doing these unique flavors right now, but it's also a really great baker. And that, you know, it's like, sure. it's a thing. Yeah. There's a story.
So the premise was, you know, it began from that. The holidays, you know, obviously go without saying, it's always going to be kind of the pinnacle of the year for really any sort of craftsperson doing anything. Why? Because as humans, we spend the most amount of money in November and December. We just do, like the world over, like any market, any country, like that's the time of the year. But outside of that, what I couldn't understand was, okay, I'm experiencing this amazing product. And when I was in Italy during holiday time, I was like, for the most part, it's kind of a singular flavor. It's some sort of citrus with some raisins, and yes, you can intermittently find like a chocolate one, but for the most part, it's like dominated by it, which is all good and well. What I couldn't understand is two things. One, this is so delicious. Why can I only have this in December? Number one. Number two, why isn't there like a family of flavors? Because I, you know, my favorite holiday is actually Thanksgiving. Okay. And growing up in the States, right? Like I love pie, apple, pumpkin, pecan, love all three. And they are always on the table for Thanksgiving. But that has nothing to do with the fact that we have a multi-billion dollar pie industry in the US that operates 12 months a year with thousands of different flavors the year over, right? And it has nothing to do with the fact that, yes, in the third Thursday of November, we stick to three basic flavors that everyone kind of, you know, will debate. We're all good, but they're not mutually exclusive. Can't you, like, outside of Christmas, can't we like have different flavors of panettone and offer it year round? Like, why not? And what's so
No, I was just gonna ask, what's your favorite flavor?
It's very mood dependent for me.
I agree.
Like depending on my mood. It really varies, to be honest with you. So for me, it was like an obvious ripe fruit sort of like, you want to tell me this billion-dollar industry of this SKU is one out of 12 months a year? Like that made, not only did it not make sense to me, I'm like, is no one seeing this gap here in this, right? There's 11 months of commerce that no one's even attempting to like, and I get it. It's going to take time, like to convince people, right? That, hey, you know, you don't have to only have this in December, right? Like we could consume this delicious thing outside of only December. Maybe, you know, is it going to take some, you know, maneuvering, and it has to be via the right brand, and of course the quality has to be at a certain, all good, but those are all details, right? Just conceptually, the idea that you have this SKU that revenues globally over $1 billion a year in about a 6-week period of the year is just like, wow.
It's nuts
that, I mean, how about this, forget what I am doing, that any like huge food company wasn't like, I wonder if there's a there. Like there's 46 weeks a year that there's zero sales of this product. Maybe we should try
So I'm guessing that people are buying your Panettone in those 46 weeks for sure. I mean, you've created it, a non-seasonal Panettone company. Okay, which then I'm going to ask you this. How do you like to eat your Panettone?
So of course, I'm able to kind of walk and chew gum at the same time. Cutting a slice, right, you know, doing nothing to it and just consuming it, of course, no question about it. I'd say a very close runner up to that is I like to take a slice, put my oven on broil, right, and put it in and like 2 minutes, getting the top of a slice like crispy but not charred, right, where that very, very top layer is like this crispy brown and then warm, unctuous. So now we really have, I add two components to it, right? There's the temperature, right, which is no longer room temperature. And there's an added textural component dependent of the crispy glaze, right? But even if I had an unglazed panettone, right, you're adding a textural component of like crisp oven, right? That top, right? And so I love it. I love it like that as well. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not a kind of, you know, serving Nazi. Like, however it is you like to eat it is, you know, it's kind of like, how do you like to eat your pizza?
I like to eat it the way you like to eat it, like that kind of toasted, like crackly on top. But I like to put zabaglione on top of it. Like my thing.
I did an event with Vetri in Philly over a year ago, and for the guests that came, we did that. It was like a hard toast with zabaglione tableside on, right? And yeah, I mean, I think the parameters that I would put forth, and I think it's kind of a general parameters. Just don't do too much,
okay.
Right? Like zabaglione, panettone, great. You want to dollop a whipped cream, great. Like, but don't start, you know, doing a bunch of things to, you know, something that in and of itself, in its naked state, is delicious on its own. That doesn't mean that it can't be also delicious in a different way with an accompaniment. But I'd say like panettone and like one thing is probably kind of where you want to be, right? Not like zabaglione and then there's a sauce on a plate and then you're putting crumbly things everywhere. Right? Like, no.
Okay. I agree. But I'm also very like rigid when it comes to how I eat my pizza. I offer no flexibility.
I can relate in many ways. Oh, I do have a phenomenal pet peeve about years of observing people eat panettone. So you might find this funny. Particularly, I see it most for people that are having it for the first time, right? So if I cut a slice, here's what I don't like to do. If I have a panettone, and let's say there's a room of people, what I don't like doing is cutting it in like little cubes. Like if you go to like a store and they're doing panettone tastings, they'll like, take a panettone and they cut them like in square. So everyone like gets a square.
Like at the supermarket when they're doing the little thingies.
That's exactly right. So I impart on anyone, please don't do that, right? I want everyone to experience a slice of panettone from the top to the bottom, because there's textural things happening on top, there's the interior, and there's the ratio of that slice, internal structure, crust, glaze, right? So if you're serving panettone, please serve people slices. Because if you're doing like the square thing, there's gonna be a third of the people at your house that are gonna get one with the glaze. Then there's gonna be a third that don't get it with the glaze, but get like a nice amount of interior.
It would be like serving a piece of cake with just the center part. I totally get it. Or a pie. Right. That you're just doing, I completely get it. It is wrong.
I agree. It is wrong. Let me tell you what else is wrong and should be outlawed. Cutting someone a slice, and again, it usually only happens with like first timers, and most first timers don't do this, but every now and again, I'll see people do this. I'm like, I find that so interesting and kind of infuriating at the same time. You give someone a slice, right? You imagine a slice of panettone, right? It's got this kind of arc right at the top of the arc. You've got the glaze, or right? So if I handed you this slice before I tell you what my pet peeve is, I handed you a nicely cut slice of panettone, how would you eat it? Like, what would you do?
I'm kind of a savage. I just eat it with my hand and put it in my mouth.
Which end is going in first?
I mean, it depends, because sometimes, you know, when you like, and I don't always like this. You know how when you get the air socket, like you get the air ball, so like it, like the center of it has nothing inside. Then I just go for the top and like that.
Okay.
I mean, I think so probably in general, yeah, in general, I'll go for the arc part and put it in. Yeah.
So every now and again, I'll see someone, I'll give them a slice, and their first bite. Now,
don't even say. I know what you're gonna say. Go ahead, say it. Yes.
And it's so funny. My bakers have seen me do this.
The bottom.
Depending on the mood I'm in, I was like, wait, like, what are you doing? They're like, I'm tasting your panettone. I'm like, from the bottom? Like, why would your first bite be from the bottom of anything? Like, I don't know. If I handed you a slice of pizza, are you like going
You know, there's like some TikTok trend where people eat like cupcakes upside down. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they slice it and then eat. Oh, no, sorry. It's another trend. But it is something as absurd as eating the bottom of a panettone, which to me makes literally no, like, I mean, I've eaten the side. I've eaten the other side. But
oh, no, that's different. But starting at the bottom.
It's wrong. It's completely wrong.
And so, yeah, I would, you know, two things. Cut people nice slices, and please make sure they don't start from the bottom.
How just since you're the expert, how thick should the slice be?
If you ask my daughters, vary.
Okay.
You know, my 1 kilo panettone, which is it's the tall one, not the wide one, right? If I'm serving, right, I cut it in half, and then I cut each half in four.
Quarters. So there are eight pieces then.
Yeah, I mean, we like to say 8 to 12. You could cut each half in six. The likelihood that giving out 1/12 of that to a person that they're going to come back for another slice is very high, because it you know, it's just not enough, in my opinion. In a tasting, like if I was somewhere where a lot of people like wanted to taste a bunch, I'd cut it in 12, right?
But I think we're gonna go with your daughter's rule of thumb.
Yeah, cutting it in eight is I'd say a very respectable portion per person, for sure.
A big thank you to Roy and his delicious panettone for keeping up the calories and making this episode happen. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ciao Bella. The editor of Ciao Bella is Mastro. Production manager is Jenna Spray. If you're new to Ciao Bella, take a peek at ciaobella.co, our all-encompassing Italy-focused website, where you'll find insider insight on contemporary Italy. And sign up for our newsletter for new episodes and articles. Follow me on Instagram at Erica Firpo, and follow Ciao Bella on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Leave us a rating or comment. Ciao, ciao.